Well, sure is. And our special guest tonight, James Wasserman, the Temple of Solomon. And when we come back in a moment, we will take your phone calls with him right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, James Wasserman with us. We'll take your phone calls, too, throughout this last hour here on Coast to Coast AM. James, everything you've done, secret societies, the Illuminati, as you look at this picture, what does this picture look like today? What's out there?
Well, hopefully what's out there, George, is a world of folks in these secret societies, in these free-thinking, searching, liberating groups that are trying to somehow counter the collectivist message that is permeating our society. Somehow, I hope that at least the OTO, the group that I'm part of, is teaching individualism, teaching individuality, teaching the value of learning to think for yourself, discover your own ideas, hold fast to your own ideals, and reject the thought that you're anyone else's property. This is the big thing that concerns me today. We're turning ourselves into, when we turn over healthcare to the government, we are making ourselves their children. We're developing a paternalistic European-style socialism, which will ultimately result in tyranny. Nothing is more dangerous to a citizenry than a powerful government with the ability to decide life and death matters.
That's right. That you have to depend on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Look at the number of people who were killed in the 20th century by government. That was the point. Among the Nazis and the Chinese communists, the Russian communists, the Cambodian communists, these were statists who held the ideals that they were building a new free society. What, in fact, they were building was a genocidal tyranny that took dissent and crushed it. At the altar of what? The altar of agreement, the altar of subservience, the altar of slavery. It's a frightening concept, and it's not part of the American tradition. It's what this republic was designed to escape and to offer as an alternative, a society of free people.
Well, what's kind of ironic, James? It looks like we're doing a flip-flop. The Europeans seem to be going more toward what we used to be, and we're going the other way.
It's a nightmare, George. It's the most depressing part of what I see around me. But at the same time, I see some of the folks that I work with on a regular basis and some of the young people that I see. Even I have a 17-year-old daughter, Some of these kids are really starting to think for themselves. They embraced some of that collectivist enthusiasm of the last couple of years and then all of a sudden saw where it led. And now they're beginning to say to themselves, hey, maybe we need to think through this a little more carefully.
Well, we used to do that in the 70s, too, though. You remember the Vietnam protests, of which some of them were very wrong because they attacked the troops, not the issue.
I remember it very well.
Yep.
I remember it very well. And you're absolutely right. That was one of the major undeclared wars. It was actually the second one. Korea was the first undeclared war. And we have not truly waged a proper war since World War II. And World War II is also the last victory that America experienced. Unless you want to look at Grenada, which is, raiding the popsicle stand, war is serious business. It should only be entered into as the last resort. And when it is entered into, it must be done to win.
That's so true. Let's go back to the phones now. Let's pick it up by going to Phyllis in Portland, Oregon, west of the Rockies to get us started. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi, George. Hi, James.
Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. The reason I'm calling, what a fantastic show tonight, but my father was a Mason, his father also. My dad passed away unexpectedly to him. We all knew he would, but he wasn't expecting it. And he was a 33-degree Mason.
Mm-hmm.
And he left. When we went through his artifacts or his things, we found all kinds of things from him being a Mason. We found books in a language I've never seen before, artifacts such as an ivory puzzle, and we don't know what to do with them. Keep them as a keepsake for our children, and if any of them become a Mason or what? It's just very odd. I mean, the language.
Have you considered contacting his lodge and asking them the question?
When he passed away, we did contact his lodge, and we didn't get any response back from them.
Huh.
Oh, dear.
So I don't know if they were having... I don't know why they never contacted us back. But
I definitely would hold on to it, Phyllis, for the rest of the family.
Yeah, it's very strange, though. Like, the booklet, I've got his demolé badge from when he first went into the Masons in 1942. And
wow.
And some of the things, the ceremonies he had to go through, and the language in the books, it's nothing like I've ever seen before. It's I have no idea what kind of language it is. It's really weird.
Okay, well, I don't know what you can do. That was a good advice, James, but the lodge isn't interested.
Amazing. Then by all means, treasure it, you know, and hopefully some of your own kids. My father was a Mason, and he wanted me to join DeMolay in the worst way. I was always like, you know, I was so rebellious as a kid that naturally if he did it, I didn't want to do it. And now I'm finally joining the Masons, and, you know, I'm in my early 60s, so it's about time, I guess. But, you know, I have his Masonic Bible here, and I hope to be able to use it in some way in my own elevation when I do it. So it may take some time for other members of your family to embrace that stuff, but, you know, keep it treasured. It obviously meant a great deal to your dad.
David is in Wyckoff, New Jersey, on the wild card line. David, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to ask something that was mentioned a half hour ago or so in relation with Mr. Crowley.
Okay.
And you mentioned finding your true purpose in life and focusing exclusively on that. It seems to me that that should be the object of everyone, but I'd like to explain a really scientific, comprehensive way how to do that. And incidentally, along the way, the financial independence to achieve that. Now, I mentioned this as an aside to Mr. Norwich, could we have the Beach Boys for some bumper music? Please.
We do that. We do that.
Very, very, very,
they're
very
good.
Rarely.
I love them. As a matter of fact, I'd love to get the Beach Boys in the studio, especially now that they've revived themselves somewhat. But James, what do we do? How do people change themselves?
Well, what Crowley suggested was that you do certain things. The first one of which was to keep a magical diary so that you can record what it is that you do. You begin the practice by starting to explain some of your life, recounting where you came from, what your family background was, what your interests are. Make a kind of observation of yourself in a dispassionate and objective way. And then keep a record of the kinds of things you do to explore this river of the soul, this true will. He had a series of very elaborate spiritual practices. He was deeply engaged in meditation and visualization exercises to develop the concentration so that you would become more finely attuned to these intuitive messages that you'll start to receive regarding what it is that your purpose in life is. You know, it's a kind of spiritual cleansing. He also recommended a goodly number of practices for cleaning the aura, for keeping the body healthy, and for trying to understand, you know, what our purpose is by getting a comprehensive reading list of the world's religious teachings and spiritual teachings, and kind of giving a person a wide-ranging background and knowledge of other people's ideas. He insisted on studying a kind of scientific set of guidance, exploring the self in a scientific manner.
Mm-hmm.
Like to do an experiment, to record the results, and to observe the results over time, so that it was done. It was spiritual practices with a scientific method, an experimental method of understanding them, that eventually would result in a better understanding of your purpose in life.
Are you concerned at all about the future of mankind, James?
I'm very concerned. You know, I'm extremely concerned. This is the kind of thing we've been discussing tonight, and in the sense of we're either going to become some beehive of collectivist weaklings who are reaching out to our slave masters, the people, you know, you were describing from Eyes Wide Shut, whose cynical and perverse tastes, you know, involve a kind of pleasure at the slavery of their inferiors, or we're going to be, you know, a nation and a world of free people evolving and kind of using the resources of the earth in a responsible manner, but in a rational manner. We belong here. You know, we belong here in a way. Our sources of energy will keep up with our needs if we're in harmony with our environment. And, you know, one day we may take our quest to other planets, but in the meantime, we need to keep ourselves happy and at peace with nature here on Earth. And that involves using resources, not being diffident little cowards afraid to, you know, drive in a car because, God forbid, we should spend 2 hours by ourselves rather than, you know, on a mass transit system in the presence of you know, our guardians.
Good point. Let's go to Robin, Palm Coast, Florida, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I have a question regarding James's, I guess, his following of Aleister Crowley. I've studied his teachings, and I was kind of concerned about two of them. I was going to ask James about them. He had said he basically has, in my train of thought, he has a kind of anything goes mentality. And one of the quotes he's famous for is, "Do as thou wilt." And then also, I've heard that he also said that the best prey are young, innocent boys. And I don't understand how someone could follow a man that teaches this kind of thing. And I was just wanting to put that question out there.
Okay, good question.
Well, Robin, you know, I appreciate the question and the opportunity to explain what was going on there. Number one is, do what thou wilt is not at all do whatever you want. On the contrary, do what thou wilt, Crowley described it as the most severe ethical, the most austere ethical teaching ever uttered to the mind of man. It seems like a problem. It seems like do whatever the heck you want, but it is not. It is a holy obligation, and it is the most difficult thing to do your will and only that. It has nothing to do with do whatever you want. That's a complete misunderstanding of Crowley's teaching. Regarding the young boy thing, that was a joke that he made. It has driven those of us who are his adherents crazy, because he was a prankster. And he made a statement. He was talking about the sacrifice of a young child of perfect intelligence. What he was actually talking about was orgasm. He was talking about semen. He was talking about the expelling forth of
I get your picture.
And the sacrifice was the sexual act. You know, and the child of the male child of perfect intelligence was the orgasm, and he did it because what he was doing was he was essentially saying, I can discuss child sacrifice in my society, but I can't discuss sex. It was a post-Victorian society that Crowley grew up in, and he was a shameless prankster. He had a great sense of humor. He was
to some.
Yeah, to some. But he got those of us who are his adherents into a lot of trouble with stuff like that. And, you know, I have to smile when I think what a pain in the behind he's been to me in that yeah. regard. You know, it makes it difficult. But I know what he was talking about, and I know it had nothing to do with either you know, child abuse, sexual perversion, or anything, or murder. It had nothing to do with that at all. It was a joke. It was a concealed joke.
Now, could you say the same thing for Anton LaVey? Or was he really weird?
I don't think Anton LaVey ever hurt anybody. At least to my knowledge, I don't even know that he was accused of that.
I don't think he was either.
No, I think Anton LaVey was someone who ran a very... in a sense, you know, radical teaching. He was certainly more into what he called selfishness than Crowley ever was. Crowley was a bodhisattva. Crowley held the ideal that the purpose of human life is to help other people, not only to discover your true will, but then to teach other people how to discover their own true wills. And that ideal of the spiritual master, the spiritual teacher guiding humanity was the most important thing to him. Now, LaVey, I think, was, you know, extolled the virtues of selfishness. I don't see anything particularly wrong with what he did, but I don't see him as a spiritual teacher. I see him more as a, you know, kind of a cultural figure, like a shaman, almost like a jokester. I mean, he was, you know, he was an actor.
All right. Well, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment with James Wasserman. We are going to take your final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. His book is called The Temple of Solomon, and we shall be right back on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, our investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with some great stories of high strangeness and good news. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And James, before we wrap things up and take final calls, I want to commend you on being so knowledgeable about the subject matter at hand here. You really are an encyclopedia.
Well, George, thanks. I hope I didn't go too far with that sacrifice of the male child.
No, I had my button. I was ready to push it at any moment.
All right. I appreciate that. The encyclopedia is occasionally filled with too much knowledge.
Let's go to Anchorage, Alaska now, get the rest of the calls in. Vera's with us. Hi, Vera.
Hello, George.
Hey.
Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I am very spiritually gifted, and it's a manifestation of such at the earliest age of 3 is what I remember. And I have been propositioned by Masons and Eastern Star, which is the Sister Association of Masonry, to ask me to join them and use my spiritual gifts on the dark side.
Oh, really?
When I refuse, they entered my home and poisoned me. I've been poisoned 3 times. My civil rights have been violated, where I was placed in jail 3 days and 3 nights before I was able to slip a note out of my where I was.
Oh, my God.
Before I was seen by a judge. My mother we don't have a legacy of being in that organization. So when she joined, she dedicated her firstborn, which is myself, which is why they keep pursuing me.
They want you, huh?
Right to me.
They feel like you're theirs.
Yes, and I was molested at the age of 5 or 6 years old to prepare me for the high priest. So,
no, are they trying to do you in now, Vera? They're trying to kill you?
Well, actually, they have my oldest daughter and my youngest daughter, they have got them hooked up with Masons as their husbands. And so I was, the most recent attack on my life was last month. And I had gone out to meet my great-grandbaby, and I was forced into this Mason's, my son-in-law's home. And I barely escaped, and I was attacked trying to escape. And actually, I had to have my flight return, and there was actually air marshals on the flight coming back.
Jeez.
So these people are a dangerous cult. People are afraid of them because they think they're mystical.
Maybe this is a group of era that has gone astray? Is that possible?
I don't believe that. I believe it's pretty much the norm. After the third degree, you know the secret, and that is, you're not worshiping the true and living God. And so I am not afraid to speak out tonight because I have been dealing with this all my life, and God has blessed me. And my spiritual gifts, I'm going to continue to serve the true and living God, and I won't use it on their
behalf. All right, and let's get your take on all of this, James. What do you think?
Well, if I were she, I would probably call the police. Of course, they're probably working for the Masonic conspiracy, so maybe that's not going to help. Obviously, you know, you need to turn to prayer. That will help.
Yeah, that sure would. Okay, well, Vera, good luck to you, the best to you, and let's go to Kelly now in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Kelly. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. Hey, James.
Hi, Kelly.
I have a question. Have you heard of Edgar Cayce's Hall of Records and the Emerald Tablets of Thoth?
Now I have. How about you, Jim?
Well, yes, I have heard of that. And, you know, if we're talking about something like the Akashic Records, and if we're talking about the spiritual wisdom of the humanity inscribed in the astral light, yes, if that's what you're talking about, I'm quite familiar with it. Is that what you're speaking of?
Yes. So you're familiar with the Tablets of Thoth, the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, how they talk about the secrets of secrets and just the different chapters of the universe, like Atlantis and the laws of above and below and stuff like that.
Well, yes, of course, to some degree, of course I am. And yes. The Emerald Tablet.
How come lots of other people haven't heard of it? I mean, is it something that's not made?
The Hall of Records, they've heard a lot about listening to this program, Kelly.
Oh, good, George.
Quite a bit. I mean, we talk about it all the time. Edgar Cayce's one of our favorites.
Oh, great. Yeah, and the Emerald Tablet is described in Manly P. Hall's Secret Teachings of All Ages, among many, many other places. So I think the people who are unaware of it, Kelly, are those who haven't studied, you know, the mystical teachings or encountered it yet in their studies, but I'm sure they will.
See, I think a lot of people who aren't up late at night, for example, the daytime people, they really aren't into this stuff. They don't understand it. I mean, you know, they're working their normal jobs, they're coming home. They really don't get into this generally, and I wish they would.
Well, sure. This is obviously what you're doing here, George, is you're educating people in the vanguard of society to, you know, to grow and to think outside the box. And that, I think, is the most important goal that we can aspire to, is just learn to think for ourselves, but not be afraid to take in differing sources of information and kind of come up and accept the fact that different people have different opinions, and that there are very many different opinions out there that we can all analyze and decide for ourselves whether they're applicable in our own lives.
Okay, let's go to Glenn in San Antonio, Texas. Hi, Glenn. Go ahead.
Hey, James and George. I love your program.
Thank you.
I love what was being talked about today. It seems like everybody was pinpointing on the Masons. Listen, my question is, the Masons, they're like a spiritual organization and have parallel beliefs with the Bible. Are there other organizations that have the same beliefs that you know of, and should I join if they're the only one?
Well, I think Masons are an excellent thing for you to consider joining. And I think, you know, you could also explore concepts like the OTO, which are based on the Book of the Law, which was delivered to mankind in 1904. It's something you can look into, and I think that there's no incompatibility between the Bible and the Book of the Law, and between Masonry, frankly, and the OTO. I think there are excellent societies such as the Golden Dawn, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which offer occult teachings, and there are a lot of really good places out there, I think, for you to seek after spiritual wisdom. You need to decide what it is you're looking for, and believe me, you'll find it.
Okay, let's go next to Inglewood, California. Reggie's turn. Reggie, go ahead.
Yeah, how you guys doing, man?
Good, Reg.
Yeah, that's a pretty good show tonight. I got a couple of questions I want to say, the Illuminati. You know, the Illuminati means that you're enlightened, right?
Yes, it does.
Right. So if you're enlightened, what's so secretive about being enlightened? Enlightenment is about something that you share with everybody. So why are you being so secretive? You know something that I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like it's very confusing. But anyway, that's how I look at it. Now, I got to ask you a question. I'm reading a book called Jews, God, and History. Do you know about that book?
No, I haven't read it, Reggie.
Oh, really? Okay, well, let me tell you something about it, James, because it's a book. It came out in the at the end of the 50s, like around 59, maybe 1960.
Mm-hmm.
This book came out, and it's by an author by Max Demo. That's the name of the author.
Mm-hmm.
And in this book, and I want to know if you say this accurately, because it has a chronological order of of the history of the Jews, and it's really fascinating because there's so many things that a lot of people don't know. And in this book, it talks about, that the Jews are the ones that created capitalism, communism, and they invented the virtue of spending. This is incredible. They're really amazing how they portray the Jews. So I wanted to know if you knew this book, and it comes out on a publishing by Simon & Schuster.
Well, that's a good publisher.
Yeah, sure. I think that I actually think I've seen copies of that book, but as I said, I haven't read it. I don't think that the Jews, so to speak, invented capitalism or communism. I mean, certain Karl Marx was a Jew, but he actually rejected Judaism in favor of atheism, and he was the one who, quote unquote, invented communism. So it's not exactly a Jewish religious practice by a long shot, but he was Jewish, or at least he was born Jewish.
Next up, we go to Indio, California. Mike's turn. Mike, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks, guys. Thanks
sure.
for calling. Thanks for letting me talk. I appreciate the opportunity. A couple of things. First of all, I'm a Mason. I've been a Freemason for 15 years. I was raised in a Masonic family. My mother's Eastern Star. Father was a Freemason as well. And I wanted to give two things. First, the lady that called the beginning of the open calls, she may want to try to contact the State Grand Lodge as far as a place to try to find a home for some of those artifacts that she found in her grandfather and her father's remains when everything was said and done. My second thing is that I think the big thing that a lot of people overlook in modern Masonry is the fact that there is a sense of mysticism, the fact that we are called together to serve as something bigger than ourselves. And I think that most people mistake the drive to do that as being seeking out secretism or some big mystery, when the big mystery is ultimately the fact that we realize that there is something bigger than just us as individuals, that we're trying to serve society. And I wanted to know if you felt, James, that this was something that is probably more of a mystic aspect than most people realize.
Well, that's really beautiful, Mike. And I think your suggestion about the lady contacting the Grand Lodge of the state is an excellent idea. Thanks for clarifying that for me. And as far as the mystical meaning of Masonry as a service organization for the betterment of mankind, I could not agree with you more. I think perhaps the finest act of Masonry in what I can see is the American Revolution and the wonderful charitable work that the Masons are doing to this day. I think, are there something like 13 Shriner Burn hospitals free for children throughout
the U.S.? They do a great job.
Great job. And really a group of people who understand that they are servants of the light.
No doubt about that. Let's time for a couple more calls. Let's go to Antoine in Springfield, Oregon. Hi there, Antoine.
How you doing there, George?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. This is my first time and all, but I just wanted to get this out there. You guys talking about Masons, but I wanted to know, why is the Masons, and then you got the Illuminati, New World Order, KGB, and then you got all that. Everything else is a secret society. Everybody else is just like the CIA. Why are they all going for one mission? Why is everybody going against each other?
Well, people have egos, Antoine. And, you know, a lot of people have agendas that are not spiritual. I don't believe that the Masons are going in the same direction as the KGB. I think that the KGB is designed to grasp, seize, and hold on to power through the enslavement of other human beings. I think that the role of Masonry is to free human beings from tyranny and to teach human beings the lessons of God and the Holy Spirit.
Well, let's go now to Jim in Oakland, California. Jim, go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Hi, Mr. Wasserman.
Hi, Jim. Same name.
Yeah. A couple of things. First of all, this has nothing against you personally, but didn't Gurdjieff, the spiritual teacher, call your spiritual teacher a dirty man?
Did Gurdjieff call Aleister Crowley a dirty man?
Yeah.
Well, he may have, but so what? That was Gurdjieff's opinion. I mean, what did Crowley have to say about Gurdjieff, you know? Crowley walked around and said he picked up Gurdjieff's failures and you know, taught them how to be better people. So a lot of people have disagreed with Crowley, and a lot of people have criticized Crowley, and so what? You know, people criticize everybody. Look at what people say about George Washington or Thomas Jefferson. I mean, people who I consider to be luminaries. They killed Jesus Christ. You know, what could be a greater criticism than to nail somebody to a cross?
Had Crowley been alive today, what would he be saying?
I think Crowley would be saying it's time to wake the hell up and to pay attention to our lives and to embrace freedom and to demand that we have the ability to think for ourselves, George. I think that this whole thing that we're talking about tonight, that you're devoting your life to and I'm devoting mine, is what he would be encouraging us to do. Wake up and smell the coffee.
Let's go to Lori, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hi, Lori. Welcome to the show. Whoop. Goodbye, Lori. Let's go to Johnny in Cincinnati, Ohio. Final caller. Go ahead, Johnny.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I heard this from two different sources, and I'm not really sure if this is true or not, but is it true that Aleister Crowley died a heroin addict?
Well, he was under a doctor's prescription for heroin because of his asthma, and this was a medical treatment of that period of time.
That's true.
So the answer to your question is yes, but at the same time, the answer to your question was it was totally legal and it was under a doctor's prescription.
It just did him in.
Well, it was the prescribed treatment at the time.
Well, look how many people die of prescription drugs nowadays.
Indeed.
It is out of control. James, one more time, give us your website and where we can get your book, The Temple of Solomon.
The website, George, is jameswassermanbooks.com, and my books are available Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever fine books are sold. I have signed copies on jameswassermanbooks.com that people can order, and I'm happy to send them out with and inscribe them. If people would like their names on them, I'm happy to do that, and just let me know.
You did a great job. Did you have a good time?
I had an excellent time, George, and I cannot thank you enough for this opportunity.
All right, my friend, you take care of yourself. James Wasserman, again, the name of his book, The Temple of Solomon. On our next Coast to Coast program, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us, and she's covered some more great stories, including more of those sounds, those booms that people are hearing, those hums. So make sure you're part of that program. First hour, we'll have a little a guest for you that we'll put on the website at coasttocoastam.com, which, of course, always make as one of your favorites. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.